paper, which is nothing else than some axis along this box here. And what we can read out is the probability, which is the scalar product, the measurement, and the probability vector at the end, only in these extreme cases where the state isn't an answer to this measurement, read out fully this bit, or even less than that. So this is an example where indeed you see that there is a possibility to have a number of degrees of freedom, free, but still have only one bit of information. Think of the natural question is why to stop here? Basically, why don't we think about theories in which D could be any number, but still to even borrow rules from the quantum theory, and particularly we can read out on this one bit of information and still think about one bit systems. So are these theories possible at all? Is a question. I should mention that all these theories are in agreement with the principle that was suggested back in 1999 by Zeilinger as a guiding principle for the quantum theory, that the most elementary system contains one bit of information. But also is apparent from this example that obviously this principle alone cannot single think about even a classical bit, which is obvious, but also about some more general. So what I'm going to talk on this occasion, I'll try to address give some answers to various questions. First of all, what is a free or two-level quantum mechanical system, which is obviously a very general foreign question. Second, can be answered personally as well. What is the second case of the series on quantum theory for this more general class theories? Can you say something about the physics of a two-level system, even if the number of degrees of freedom is a general thing? I call this generalized or achieving. And I'll touch upon some information computational features of these GBs. So why are we starting from the theory? We already heard about three or four possible reasons. I'll pick up only two of them. One is to gain some maximization of quantum theory, with the hope that once we have these more easily perhaps physical principles, then they will be the reason for all these complicated features of quantum theory, such as violation of Bell inequalities, or quantum or even Wilson's bounds, why if it's actually, for example, violation of 2 square root of 2 or not more, and so on. But the second reason is, in my opinion, even more interesting, because there is a hope that by narrowing down these old theories and taking more and more of structure of these theories, maybe we will have chance to see and to reconstruct consistently some other theories, which might be even realized in nature, and maybe we make that we have not looked that far. Or we will be sure that there is only one theory, and that way it's a similar quantum. But to give some very speculative an example where we might look for these general theories, I will mention that if you think about these generalized GBs as described as deep cosmic parameters, if you think about a directional degrees of freedom, really spin, it will be described in these deep parameters. We can think about really as a spin embedded in a d-dimensional real space. And I know that some approaches of quantum theory, like generalization, tell us that at small scales, the dimension should change from 3 plus 1 to 1 plus 1, for example, and that there is a very continuous change. So maybe one can think about these generalized bits that are described as different number than 3 of parameters as being embedded in some space that is given. I'm not questioning how this raised this space. Of course, this is bold speculation, but.
So what did you say was the theory of change from 3 plus 1 to 1 plus 1?
Yes.
Why
What theory does it?
Triangulation.
Sorry.
So they start with the like pyramidal elements, and they remove them. So what is the idea behind this approach? This is nicely described by he wrote it as Professor Wheeler has argued the origin of quantum mechanics structures to be solved in a theory of observation and observers, and meaning they would do well to focus our attention not on entities, but on quantities which are more directly observable. It's probably there are nothing more directly observable than the realities themselves. And indeed, quantum theory can be written in terms of real numbers that we read. So this is some hints that are used in later construction. And if you think about the density matrix as an L-level system, then indeed change into the description of something which is written on the right-hand side, where L is eventually the density operator, then this traceless operator can be decomposed in the Hilbert-Schmidt basis. And we look as an L-square minus one-dimensional real vector, which we call sometimes block vector. And just to give some examples, in a single case of single qubit, this would be the composition of the three Pauli matrices for the three directions of space. And even the two qubits, you can think about that. They have a description of the state structures of this triplet, so the single load and block vector of the first qubit, load and block vector of the second qubit, and then you have something which is sometimes called correlation tensor, and has nine components for all possible global correlations of the qubits. For example, if you think about a pure state, a general pure state, which is formed and given as written here, then this triplet is given in this line. You see that it has, for example, 16 cases, for example, an x equal to 0. You have the last component, which is minus 1, because you have an anti-correlation along this z direction. And you have here 1 and minus 1 for the local block vectors. And in other extreme cases, if it is maximally tangent state, you have 0 local block vectors and anti-correlations on all three directions. So that's the way how you can parameterize this general pure states. So as I said, I will follow the structure, the logic of Hardy's paper. So I'm going to talk in operational terms. And there are three steps, or three basic elements of the construction. Preparation of the state, which I imagine as some classical apparatus with some buttons that you adjust and prepare a certain state. Then you have a transformation of the state, a transformation device. And finally, for some measurement also, by choosing, setting, choosing the measurements. I will try not to, my aim is not to speak about interpretation of things. Occasionally, you might mention something or maybe end of the talk, but I will keep this for the prospectus workshop later. So let's start with your construction. So again, I'll talk about pure mixed state. The state will be given as a set of probabilities, in the general case, the probabilities, and I will switch immediately to this block vector, the kind of block vector, the two and a half block theory vector. I will switch directly to these new quantities that will relate to the probabilities in this form. This is allowed because what is important in this transformation preserve linear structure regions. So if I think about a preparation, possibility to prepare with some probability lambda 1 state and another state with some probability 1 minus lambda, this linear structure will be preserved even if I change to this x, I, instead of speaking about probabilities. And now at the end of my talk, I will use x and represent the state. Now, the state is how to be pure if there exists some complete maximum measurement, and then even for which I will have a deterministic answer. So I assume that there is a measurement that returns at least for one given qubit 1. And the mixed state will be a complex mixture of pure states, the usual approach that we think. So if I have some pure states, psi 1, psi 3, then I have a complex mixture of possible mixed states that are represented in this form, such that one is positive between 0 and 1, and the sum of the numbers is 1.
Is this a different definition of pure than the usual definition? I mean, quantum theory is supposed to, but the usual definition is that this is not mixed. There's a contrary mixture.
No, this is not, I think it's not special. So, even if also things, this is not special, you can have even something probably which is not mixed. And it's easier to understand. So, what? Yes.
There's a context set of states, is that
right? Yes.
And these would be the extreme points.
These would be the extreme points. And I think this is in agreement with the usual definition.
So the question is, which is the definition, which is the result? He's defining in terms of measurement. And then from that, you can say, you can construct the self-based states, the pure states, the extreme points. But that's the other way around from what he suggested. It's not defining the extreme.
So about the transformations, we assume that the Gandhi's transformation keep the linear structure, and this is one of the results that we see in this paper. It means that the T's function is a linear structure, so it's some matrix that multiplies by state x, and there is some maybe non-trivial path T0. What I will assume about the transformations is the following, that there is a possibility to have a reverse transformation. What does this mean? If there is some old operation which I call x1 and x1 operation of state, and some measurement which I described as some vector r1, and if I assume that there is a measurement such that for the given state, I could have a deterministic answer, for example, here. Then, by injecting here just identity transformation, and if I assume that there is a inverse of the transformation, I would get at the same time a new preparation, so a new state, which has to be the pure state, because this new measurement will return the same result as before. So in that sense, by assuming that t isn't working, that I have the t minus 1, I would have the t preserved pure. So that's my assumption that I use that t can be inverse. So here's the notion which I need to introduce what is this non-trivial path, t of 0, that I mentioned before. You think about totally mixed or invariant state. The totally mixed state is defined as equally weighted mixture of all pure states. So if you have a finite number of pure states, you sum up all of them, but with them, but if you have some continuous set, you will replace the sum of the two. This is not important.
But I think it is just the measure.
Yeah,
the
measure.
What is the measure that is continuous?
Yeah. I mean, how do you decide? I mean, obviously there's some natural choice. How do you decide?
There is more up here. Yeah, that's it.
Well, but. But that's the whole point then, because I mean, you said that that's not important. I mean, it is. Is there some argument? I mean, maybe this is said through the discussion, but at least in private now. Is there some argument for why you should choose one measure over another?
I don't see.
Well, because the set of allowed transformations take out a unique measure that's invariant under the
That's how I want to show them that T is invariant. That under this map, mixture is invariant under T.
Okay, so that would take out a measure.
So there will be some relation between the transformation and the measure of the integration.
Okay, maybe we should take that very well.
So you see, if I apply this transformation, and the transformation changed one pure state to another pure state, then this region would be the same. That sense, the totally invariant state is American Unitary Transformation. But now, if you go back, if you go back to this picture and you think about this p-state, and then apply this t-transformation right then, and then say the p-state, which I showed that is invariant, then I would have the same situation, same probability distribution now for the different pressure. So what I would say is that for these totally invariant states, this is invariant on all possible measurements. That's why I assume that the measurement results will be 1 over L for all possible measurements.
If you take a complex set which is egg-shaped,
which is X-shaped,
say two-dimensional, then the set of transformations which have an inverse is just contains just two elements, I suppose, right? Because you have just this symmetry. And then you have a whole bunch of invariant states along the axis of the arrow. So just the fact that you ask if it's invariant, it doesn't choose one state.
One is complex because the other measurement is if I change just orthogonal state. If I call this measurement as without combining two, then I can have a measurement which gives the probability. In the previous one, it gives probability for the first outcome. In the second situation, it gives the same probability for the second outcome. Just need to change this measurement. This should be also valid under these two measurements.
But that's not a transformation on your set of states. Because you cannot invert it like this. I mean, you cannot invert the top of the egg with the bottom.
Yes.
You understand what
yes.
I mean? It's not clear to me.
What was your point then?
So, you want to define the invariant state as the set, as the state which is invariant or over all possible transformations which have an inverse.
Yes.
Okay, in this case of the egg, this set of transformation contains just two elements. I think so, right, because of symmetry. And then it means that the states which satisfy these requirements are all the states which are on the axis. So the definition doesn't choose one of them. And I suppose also you have no states here in which you have the same probability for all measurements because of you lack the spherical symmetry. So yeah, so probably you're assuming a spherical symmetry here already. Just this example.
It just needs to be linear though. You can imagine a transformation that it squishes the egg through a circle and then rotates and then...
It's no longer the same function set. It is no longer. So you cannot... I'm just speaking about
new
systems. Because it doesn't preserve the convex structure.
Lucas, your example is a two-dimensional one, right?
Also three-dimensional, but
three-dimensional.
Just two-dimensional. Then you have just two transformations. You invert along the axis. You make a specular symmetry. And that's the only thing you can do to preserve the convex structure.
I think the additional assumption that you need in order to make this totally invariant state unique is that certain transformations act transitively on your set of your states. Yes. So that for any two pure states, there is a transformation that leads one to the other.
So this would be
just by saying you want a unique P, or are you not saying that?
I just want to show at the end that P zero. Whatever it's really, it's not a real state. It's zero. This is the so what? So you remember that you are missing this part. Okay, this totally mixed state in the Hilbert in the Bloch sphere transformation is a zero state. Okay. So I want to know what is zero.
So you're taking a just an example. Take this e. I'm not saying it's a unique.
No, I'm just taking this E, I want to, because it is invariant, it will return for all possible measurements 1 over L, which will make that the Bloch vector is 0. And since it is invariant, then I can utilize this not trivial path to 0.
It will make the human condition. So, suspend the assumptions are required.
So at the end, what I want to have is that the T is represented by some D. So what the second thing is, what we assume is that the group structures are real. Assume that their compositional transformation is a random transformation. And here's a non-trivial part which we assume, namely that there is a group representation of E in terms of protonal matrices. So it's sometimes called, it's not really broken, but sometimes sure, Auerbach theorem, which we assume that it applies. So what this says is that there is a vertical matrix S such that STS minus Y is a vertical matrix. So in all, the whole approach I would always assume that we work this representation picture a lot. That this is possible. This is not a very strong requirement. It's, for example, it's satisfied for finite groups or continuous complex groups, all groups that this theorem can apply. So let's go to the final element in these three elements, is the measurements. So what the measurement returns for some state, so we can measure correctly some number, and we assume that again the linear structure is preserved. And since the zero element is the invariant element, we for all measurements, which is just 1 over L. And this allows us, since this is a linear function, and this is an element, 1 over L, to write down the probability rule. And the factor L minus 1 assures that even if this scale product is 1, we are still close to the random 1. The length of R, like in Hart's paper, represents the outcome for the given measurement setting. For example, 100 is a lot of dollars for the first session. Now, we want to know what is the set of measurement vectors. So we want to relate somehow this R, addressed to the set of states, the result that has been derived from Hart's paper. I will talk about these coordinates, new and old coordinates before and after the transformation. This transformation is such that the probability remains invariant in the transformation. And I will go into this representation picture which I introduced in the previous slide. So in this representation picture, I will have a new state and a new measurement vector. And the transformation is such again that the probability remains invariant. And if you introduce this from this representation picture, then you can see that in the new coordinates of this representation picture is related to the old one by orthogonal transformation. This is coming from this graph. Namely, here in the original picture, transformation P, this is the representation. So I go from this element to the new one. S minus 1 TS, which is my total matrix. But also for the measurement vectors, I have a similar situation. I have here now the word, so all remains is transposed. T minus 1 T and S minus 1 T, which is a total transformation. So in both cases, I have a total matrix that connects in the representation pictures. New and old states and new and old measurement vectors. Here you see this just to have in front of you, it's no information. So if these are total matrices, then indeed the modulus of them are some of these vectors are constant and they can be renormalized such that they are uniform. And if they are uniform, I can introduce new orthogonal matrices. Matrix K such that all coordinates are related to each other with this matrix K. And going back to the new coordinates in the representation picture, I see that they are related with the matrix OK of transposed. But now, if you compare the following things, if you compare, first of all, the modulo of C2. the model of M is C2, then if you look at this expression, you see that this transformation has had a lot of, this vector has model C1, and Y has also C1, and this is for all Ys, which means that the K matrix is identity matrix. Now, if it is an identity matrix, the relation simplifies. This is the good representation picture. The measurement vector is just shifted by vector the state, which when I go back to the original Rx, we see that these are related to each other in some P matrix. But this P matrix is a positive, is symmetric, is a vertical matrix. So there is a way how to relate the states with the measurement vectors by this P matrix. This was, as I said, also done by Harvey once for a week for the first set of year of the week. So now we're coming closer to the shape of the states. So we have a probability for having the state x1 and finding them to be in state x2 is given by this P matrix, because the measurement can be written like that. And the pure states we recover such that the measurement is state again will be probability 1. So we have something which was part was also in Wilson's paper, x transpose the x is equal to 1, which shows that the x are points on a d-dimensional side in general. The two-level system simplifies the situation a bit because we can easily find out what are the autonomous state, since the sum of the probabilities is 1. The autonomous state is just the anti-parallel to the original one. So they are on the same line, opposite points. And if I choose the orthogonal eigenstates of the D matrix represented by measurements, then it returns just the eigenvalue of 1. For the pure states, I see that in the carbon they are orthogonal and they are not of order 1, so that I can deform this ellipsoid into the sphere of D minus 1 spheres of the d-dimensional states, and I can have a simplified version of the probability, which is very close to a Bohr vector representation in the case of number theory. But the questions remain, of course, how whether the physical states form the entire d-dimensional sphere. So you can think about some discrete theories, or you can think of some holes inside the sphere. So how can we get the whole sphere, at least beyond the quantum theory, this is the case. So you can see simply that the maximum set which is consistent with this probability being between 0 and 1 is indeed the whole entire sphere. But this does not exclude some discrete theories. One of the possibilities to use is this continuous axiom. But there is maybe an alternative one, which says that any state pure mixed of two-level systems can be prepared by mixing across two orthogonal states. What I mean with this is, imagine that you have just a discrete theory, and you just have a two positive states, and they are orthogonal ones, x1 and x2. I build up some complex set, and a big part of the state from the set. What this axiom requires is that this state can be decomposed again with some other lambdas into two physical states, x and x orthogonal. And then you have to add this as a possible physical state and go on, and then you will fill the full sphere. Now, you can think about this axiom maybe slightly differently, very formally, that any state can be prepared as a mixture of classical bits, 0 and 1. So, at least for some measurement, this state looks like a classical bit. And maybe just a remark on the side, I don't know how relevant it is, the whole construction, but if we think about sharing information with any other natural information, this decomposition is in a sense the minimal entropy decomposition. So all possible decomposition is one has a minimal entropy. So if you rather this exists always, you get back to the full entire space. Now here is the proof or form of proof of the physical sites are the types here. So you start with some line going from the origin, hopefully leaves the Brian state, to the points on the surface. And then you know that every state can be decomposed linearly, states into being and elements of. So requiring these bilinear independent states are pure states for sufficiently small t, and adding to those also orthogonal ones, every point in this line for sufficiently small t can be understood as a physical state. Why? Because it can be written as a mixture of x i's and orthogonal x i's. And with the coefficients that are written here, because this is a two-level system, you know that orthogonal states are states with the minus in front. So indeed, this minus and this minus gives plus, so that the sum over lambdas gives back you to the sum of c's. And you can also see that sufficiently small d, these numbers are indeed positive. So now, according to this axiom, these physical states can always be written as a classification of two physical states, which I call here x0 and minus x0. And indeed, this can be done, and the solution is that alpha is always 1 plus t over 2, and the x is x0. So I see that all the through this 0 point to the point of the surface, I always have physical states. There is no faults in between. Physical states are entire states. This will be a bigger entire sphere. So what do we have so far? Well, we have the states, we have measured vectors, we identify them with D-1 sphere. The states are given a set of probabilities or with these Lov vectors. Orthogonal states are anti-parallel. And I will call extend this elements to the transformations. I require that the transformation preserve the purity of the state, which gives me that the matrices represent the transformation of topological matrices. And then I also make a non-trivial assumption, which is basically justified in continuous theories, that I will look on into the SUV matrices. So, determinant one, because they are continuously connected. Although all the pure proofs will go also for the discrete theories in which this transformation is a physical transformation, the physical ground for having this assumption is certainly the continuous theories because of connectivity with them. So here the problem or the question that I would like to address. First of all, how many complementary observables of mutually harmonized data sets do we have in case of generalized bits, something about computational capabilities of GPs, and also can these two general bits be involved? So, in order to answer the first question, I have to make a break in a small excursion to propositions and logical propositions. And let me just remind you that if you think about Boolean function or binary argument to return a binary number, there are four possible such functions, two of them are constant, two of them are unbalanced. And if you think about it, you have only possibility of posing one question, and suddenly can answer you only one bit. Answer you one bit. Answer. There are three mutually exclusive possibilities to ask about the problems of these functions. One of them, what is the value of the function for the argument 0? What is the value of the function for the argument 1? Or what is the linearity of the function? And if you give an answer to this question, you can group these four functions in two mutually exclusive groups. But you see that if you have a deterministic answer to one of these questions, and you ask any other question, that you have an equal or no information about any other question, which is completely also clear from the fact that once you ask about F0, you have more info about F1. So if you are given just one bit of information resources, then only one of these three, in a sense, combinatory questions can be answered. Interesting thing is that quantum theory actually reflects this table that we have on the previous slide. If you think that the function is encoded by this unitary in some black box, where the argument of the function is the position of some piece of device inside, and the value of the function is given whether this this method is present or not present, then you can encode all four functions with a, just a piece of prism you want in the black box, putting at some position or not. And now, if you prepare a state, back to the usual one mechanics, if you prepare a state to be an eigenstate of the single C, let go through the machine and measure the same basis, you will get the answer on the about the F0 rate. Why? Because symbols don't change anything, X makes a flip. So only this information will be available after the evolution of the black box. Similarly, is if you start with the eigenstates of X and measure the X basis, you will get information about F1. And finally, if you start with Y and measure the Y basis, you will get a parity of the function, which is great. So that shows the algorithm. This formalism is analogous to the Stefan-Stoy model, where again, you can have a principle, two bits of information, a system that you just can read out one bit of them. Now, I'm slowly trying to get into this classification of theories, because if you have a classical theory, you can only pose one question: is there an object in the black box or not? No. And if this object is inside, you have an ability to flip the test a bit, you get this answer, and there is no complementarity because there is no one question this question can be answered. Perfect. But now if you start to think about the qubit, then you have three complementary questions, and it's related to the situation that the black box can have these two positions and three complementary questions you can ask about the function represented by the black box. But it's no reason to stop there. You can think about a next order theory in which the systems will be able to answer one of seven complementary questions, where I have three positions in the black box, where again the argument of the function is represented by the position of the object, and whether there is something or not is the value of the function. Now these are the seven complementary questions, three of them about the single value about the function for the signal. For the 0, 1, 2, three of them for the sums of the variable functions, and the last one, the sum of all three. And you can imagine that you can go on, and if you have, for example, S different positions in the black box, there is S over 1 of this type of functions, S over 2 for the sum of two functional values, and so on. And basically, you have 2 to the power S minus 1 to implement the questions. This was worked out in the paper you see here. So what would be the theories that would be able to address these complementary questions? And it would also have some advantages over the quantum theory, because you can have some kind of an extension of the virtuoso algorithm, because you can address any of these questions which are not possibly classically or even quantum. So here is the case of the 7. Now there you have 7 complementary questions. We have a theory of 7-dimensional blocks here, where we identify states with vectors on the surface, pure states, as we did previously. And we borrow the probability rule of quantum theory, and we take that physical transformations are equations. Then we can construct these three elements. These are the these three rotations from which we can extract any of the 7 complementary features, because the black box transformation is the composition of these three rotations. And for example, if we start with a vector which will be 1 in the first place and all zeros, and you go through all of three of them, it will be pick just this. F0 screams the minus one. So starting with this, let's say eigenstate, we pick up this one question, this is seeded choosing another of these orthogonal vectors, when you have one in some place, all other series read out others. So you can think about theory, generous theory in these operational terms, that's the main message. And this theory could be either continuous, but for these purposes it could be also discrete. Build up all of these group of operations that responds to mutually unbiased basis sets or similar general speed. But what I would like to mention, that there is a very interesting scaling that this dimension of the number of green of this theory spaces 2 to the power of r minus 1, where r is an dimensional number. And this comes even from consideration of this single object. Usually this scaling, and this is what I'm going to talk next slide, comes with some parameter counting argument for the composite systems. So far we have used this one axiom, which gives us the sphere. And now we start to think about the composite systems. So if you have the following axiom, which is actually valid versions of the axiom for the composite systems, it says that basically local measurements are sufficient to completely describe their state. So the state of composite system is completely determined by a set of probabilities for local measurements and the correlation between these measurements. It's a very strong case. That it is strong is maybe coming from the following case. That if you think about mathematically how to combine these, then you have the number of parameters for the first object, the number of parameters for second objects, and the set of for the correlations. And you imagine, of course, the composite system has the number of total states, the product of the first and the second. And the natural solution for this is that this is L to the power of R minus 1. I remind you that in the last slide we had 4M is 2 to satisfy this requirement. And this is very strong requirement, because if you think about it, some alternatives to the complex quantum theory of real quantum mechanics, this is not satisfied. You have 8 elements. If you choose, for example, spin along the C and X direction for these two, you have 8 elements, but you're missing one. This one that you miss is actually a product of sigma 1 and sigma y that contains imaginary units, metric, so if you have product between imaginary units, you'll get the amount. So obviously this is not satisfied, but the only one you can has a really completely different feature. You have too many parameters coming from the local measurements that you need really for the density matrix based on the amplitudes required, the only amplitudes. And complex one is of course satisfying. This is these 15 numbers for the two-qubit state. As previous consideration about these relations for the two papers that I mentioned, but the form of these axioms was given by Berg in 2005 paper. So this is the state now for us for the composite system. You have a local black vector, two local block vectors, and correlations. Product states given by his open measurements and correlations, not simply the product of the block vectors, so it's just product phi. And if you take for the probability rule, that given a state of confidence of psi 1, like what the chat rate is in the state of psi 1, of psi 2, given that this probability has a product of the probabilities of a load of block vectors, you can write this in this form to recognize that the last actually expression is nothing else than a trace of the correlation tensors, just was the first particle and the second particle. This we use and take for the general state to be true whenever I want to compute this probability. Very similar rule is in quantum theory, except that we still work with the general D. Not general, but D that satisfies this axiom 2 that I mentioned before. But normalization is a very important mathematical statement that sum of the norm squared is 3, and this is something which is also here, because if you have a block of states, you can hear one, and the last one should be one, but at least in quantum theory there is a case where all three in the norm relation tensors with a zero of the block vectors, the norm is defined as given here. And finally we use the transformations are from SO, as I mentioned before, I just repeat this. It's also interesting that you can always find a single value decomposition of the matrix P, diagonalize this by adjusting local transformation of one second system. Now, here's an important result. We have an entanglement difference using the correlation tensor norms. And the lemma is that the lower bound for the norm equal to 1 is saturated if and only if the state is a product state. So if you have, in other words, norm of the correlation tensor larger than 1, you know that you have something which is not a product state, you should identify this as an entanglement. In this direction, it's trivial, I don't mention this. In this direction, you can prove it also very easily. You start in a product state that has the same correlation tensor, but opposite local block vectors, and you require that the probability is larger than 0. From that, you get that the scalar product is larger than 1. Since these are normalized, it has to be always smaller than 1, or equal to 1, you get that this is a product state. So this is an example of witness this norm correlation tensor.
What did I miss in not considering the next? Are you looking at pure states?
I'm only in the pure states. D cannot be even. Here's the proof in the theory if you want to have an entanglement. Because if you flip all coordinates of a local block vector x, you will get minus x. This is for D given a regular S of D transformation. From psi we get the psi prime, but not only the psi vector will be with a minus, but also the correlation tensor. So if you require that now the probability or overlap between the state before and after the transformation is positive, you will get the norm of y should be larger than 1, which cannot be, so it must be 1. Repeating the same story, now for the inversion, for the y local vector gives the same result for the norm of x, and finally the t norm must be also 1 because the sum is always 3. So you cannot have entanglement in this theory. Now we introduce again using higher section some different formulated, perhaps too strong, but it says that upon any two linear independent states, psi 1 and psi 2, one can construct a two-dimensional substrate that is isomorphic to the three minus one sphere. It basically says that, picking any two linear independent states, I can have four features of a single system that has been derived previously from previous cases. This axiom is also needed to go further and to disprove some other cases of D. We can disprove D even better. Still, there are many of them others depending on the general theory. So look at if we get this axiom in addition, whether we can go further and explore something more. Now, let's take four orthogonal states that are product states in a general theory. So product states A1, A1, where A1 is just 1, but the first place of all others is zeros. And if you think block spheres, which is just product states going in one direction, in the other direction, and then the two local vectors are in the opposite directions. So these are four total states, and all are product states. Now, if you think about the psi general, it belongs to the subspace stem of these two total states, then the fact that this state belongs to this subspace is that the sum of the probabilities when we project these states on the first and on the second orthogonal state gives 1, and there is no overlap with the other subspace. Now, here's the first line that will help us to disprove other keys, other theories. The only quantum states belonging to S12 are the ones that I mentioned. So, as I said, we look at all states of this subspace. But not only that, in this subspace we can prove that only these two states are quantum states. Why? Because, I don't go into details, but if you pick up some product states from this subspace, this has to be satisfied. You write down these conditions, you see that also the things cancel out, and you get only two solutions. These two solutions actually correspond to psi 1 and psi 2. There is no other product states. In other words, all other product states that belong, if they exist, and they belong to S1, 2 must be. So here's dilemma 2. Dilemma 2 is a fine dilemma that will help us to go into the main result. This group, all of these, except these 3, is a lemma about transformation that inverts the axis 1. So it makes from P1, A1, and a state. Now, if the state is in this subspace filled by these two product states, and we apply this transformation to the state will change from this subspace to orthogonal one, which I call as V4. So if the state is with this subspace and we apply this inversion, it will jump into this subspace. This is what the lemma says, and it's very easy to prove it. This is the condition that the state is in this subspace, but if I apply this transformation both of the states and the basis, this basis state will, by putting one minus here, jump into psi 3, and this basis will change into psi 4. So the new state will be in subspace as V4. And now, here's the proof, which is the most important. D must be V, obeying all three axioms that I mentioned before. So we assume that psi at the beginning is in this subspace S12. These two pair of states. And now we apply a certain transformation. This transformation is the flips the first at the E coordinate of a local vector x. This transformation is a regular transformation because the derivative is constant. And furthermore, just want to say that this lemma before could be applied even if we had additional flipping not only of the A1 component, also the AI component, the other thing, because all these vectors has zeros for other components. So I can apply this lemma. And what I do is flip, I have like a certain set of transformation, one of them is flipping the first and the E coordinate. Now what does it mean? It means that I have my single local plot vector, and I put biases in front of these two coordinates. Y do not change. And the correlation tensor also changes, because I put biases in the first row and the lead row. Then I will take also the second transformation, and I put them together because it will go for both. And the second transformation is that you flip not only the first, but three other more coordinates, you know, J, K, and L. So you can write the response, right? And not do it. And to prove to that, you know, to make it understand a little easier, I just write this correlation tensor in slightly different form, namely in the form that is T, I, X are the whole rows in the matrix. So one row in this matrix is defined with this element. Now what we do? Now after the transformation one, state is the subspace T4 according to the second lambda. So I had this transformation first in the lead coordinate, and after that the state must be in the subspace T4. This fact means that the overall of the state after the transformation and the state before transformation must be zero, because before transformation it was in the subspace S1, 2. When you write this down, it's very easy to prove you get biases overlap only in front of the first and the lead component for the X, but also for these components, correlations. Then you add and subtract this once more to get the plus sign of the whole normal state. It's a few steps just, or two steps, and at the end you get that this combination must be two. All others joined into the whole normal state. But also the same applies after the transformation two state is in subspace 3-4. So there is the same can be applied in a long loop, but a whole calculation can be done again. And we have very similar structures here, and also the same for output. So what does it mean? If it is true for all IJKL, this means all elements are zero except the first element, both in the local vector as well as in the component correlation tensor. Now, you can do the same now, but instead of using the transformation only of the first particle, you do the same on the second. You just repeat everything, click the first and the deep coordinate of the local vector I, you get the same expression as in the previous case, just you change the y's and you change the components ty's instead of the rows or columns. And you can do this analog transformation of changing the fourth coordinates for the local vector y, and you get the same result. And finally, you get these four elements. So the only one remains at the end, if you combine the first part and the second part, is that T11 is 1. So the all other elements are 0, and this is clear that this is a pure product state again. So you can't have an entanglement, only product states, keeping all the indexes. So I'm coming slowly to the end of my talk. It's already an hour. What I want to say, repeat it once more, is that if you keep the three axioms, one that gives you the whole sphere, namely that every free state can be decomposed in two coordinate states, one about the composite systems, how you combine them, keeping the track of the parameters, and also the subspace axioms, all three are quantities of this paper, you get the input three, and you can get rid of the simplicity axis. But one should be careful. That's why I want to end with this. The error theory is that there are not two non-satisfied for this, for not all of these axes. And why five example is a real quantum mechanics. Why? This obviously does not, as I mentioned before, satisfy axiom of composite systems. So you have eight elements per minor. So these, if you cast the whole structure of complex quantum mechanics, you can get them by these systems. These are, for example, local components of the first and second particle in these four elements of the correlation network. Think about it real sincere. This is one which is new. So, in general, your state will be given up as a triplet, but you have to add a fourth element. You have a local block vectors, you have a correlation tensor, but you have also an additional parameter that is maybe available only from a global measure. Now, normalization gives you repeating the same now, but having one element more here than some of these squares is free. However, you can have this no damage on the possibility to have entangled states. Why? Because the maximum entangled state is defined and could be defined, let's say, or what we expect and we know from the quantum theory of complex is that x and y local block vectors are zero. Correlation tensor is now true, so the model of the model of correlation tensor is less, it's two, it's not three, and there is one element of the log of one. But this norm is sufficient to have a violation of Bell inequalities and to have this correlation with the maximum possible as in the quantum mechanics. Because according to this Horodetsky less than sufficient condition for the violation of Bell inequalities, it's sufficient to have two largest elements that are larger than one. The maximum violation that is binary for the consequential quantum inequality two square root of two is achieved then when the sum of these squares of these two correlation tensor elements is true. This is exactly the case. So what I want to say, even if you have XM of a composite system, you can still have a non-trivial theories in the sense that we have a table. So now, coming to the final slide, these are the types by XMs, some of you are familiar with this. It has this very general axiom of probabilities that they correspond to the relative frequency. There is a subspace axiom which is similar as I gave previously in the talk. There is an axiom about composite systems, which is very similar also to the parts one. So I don't want to insist on differences. And there is a continuity axiom that gave actually the polar sphere, the one that we obtained from this decomposition rule. Now, in my view, probability axiom is maybe something which is apparent, but we should ask physicists. That's not the previous. Axiom about the simplicity, I think now we can get rid of that, because subspace axioms requires to have entangled states. Once you pick these product states, psi 1 and psi 2, in the equation that I require, they can, from these two, I can build the whole sphere, and then I have to have containing states because all material states must be entangled beyond this. So all states except these two are entangled. But if you have entangled states, you collide with two others, let's say, axioms. The binary version of the composite system, that local measurements are sufficient to determine the state. But also, implicitly, I think we use in a certain sense also continuity axiom. Because although the proofs go through the case when SOD transformation, only the SOD transformation that we use in our proofs are not all of them, we pick up these inversions. But we remind them that they are way beyond to SOD. The full justification, of course, that we use SOD at all is continuity, because only those are reduced to identity. So we might reduce these to three axioms. And they can be made even in a slightly different form, more with information directed labor. And that's something to be discussed, but seems that two-dimensional systems are somehow most fundamental. And we try to go through in this reconstruction for the two-dimensional systems that are simply even defined by the fact that they can contain only one dimension. So this is this answer of how decomposition, any state of two-level system can be prepared for this close to the semi-shock distinguishing states, or you can replace this with maybe continuity axiom. Axiom about locality is the axiom about the composite system, the state of the composite system is completely determined by measurements and subsystems. And finally, the about the subspace axiom is that every system constrained to belong to a two-dimensional subspace has to behave as a two-level system in the sense of satisfying the axiom 1. So in that sense, it appears that having this axiom about two-level, this will help you to build all other high-dimensional systems. And this one brings you definitely to be in contradiction with other things that might satisfy the first and the third axioms, like real fundamental. Nevertheless, out of these three, you can only get classical or one, because hopefully that satisfies the problem, which are two that we know that they are realized. So, in order to get rid of a classical part, probably you have to strike a piece to the continuity axiom. So, what, and this is the final slide, communicate. This example of real quantum mechanics really suggests that the locality axiom is perhaps too strong, because we can't have a non-trivial universe without it. And the examples are real quantum systems, but they are only quantum. So they obey subspace axioms. And also are detained states. But they are collided with the axiom of quantum systems, locality axioms. And what I think we totally ignore in all this approaches is the fact that we should recover also classical limits. What sense that when we speak about D as a degrees of freedom of this whole theory, then this D does not mean anything else than a number of parameters that we need to describe the position of the macroscopic apparatus that finally measures the system. If you think about two parameters to describe a pure state of atmosphere. These two parameters are not just with the polar angles where we put some microscopic apparatus on this direction. So, so far we consider this problem is very abstract. It's given with some procedure. This procedure is measuring in the laboratory, and the measurement apparatus are there and ready in the real sense. So what I want to say is that we have this error is we should go from the classical limit to the fundamental theory that in very spirit with the Copenhagen, we do need to define classical apparatus to get rid of the meaning of the probabilities. But also there is an attempt to say that even the measurement apparatus are built up as fundamental. Maybe a basic theory. And the full reconstruction should be given in some kind of a circle, should be consistent. That basically attempts to discard one of these errors. So this should be the opposite one. And just mention maybe two words that are relevant, and at least for me to give a full understanding of quantum theory, that we should get a classical limit. Coming from the quantum theory, and our approach was to restrict our measurements to coarse grain measurements, to discard some part of the information that is intrinsically available, get to something which has a two variable model, has features of classical theory, and coarse grain dynamics of classical theory. But in a sense, we do need to, the only requirement is that we have a consistent circle in this. That's what I actually wrote about, what I think is important in using the concept of Kreisgang, which is the concept given by von Weizsäcker, that you are allowed actually to end with a concept in which you start to reconstruct the theory. The only requirement is to keep it in the system. So with this, I would like to end, and thank you for your attention. I'll speak a little bit over time.